Yes, yes, yes. It is your favorite baseball podcast, Diamond Pod, here on the podcast feed of America's favorite radio station, Sports Radio 96.7, 1310, The Ticket. Sean Bass, Michael Tepid, Scott Lucas with you once again this week as we talk about your Texas Rangers and the entire organization. We're going to talk plenty of minor league baseball today. But fellas, good to talk to you again. Tepid, good to have you back this week after Scott and I had to hold things down last week.
Yes, thanks for doing so. So awesome to be here.
And Scott, how are you feeling? I know we talked about you testing positive during our last podcast. I'm hearing that you're testing negative these days, which is good.
I tested negative yesterday, so I was able to go see a game. Not feeling 100%, but at least I seem to be pointing in the right direction.
Are you still kind of dragging ass?
Oh, yes.
Just in general? Yeah.
Very much so.
And you're on day what? Like, it's been 2 weeks?
Fully? 2 weeks. Uh-huh.
Man.
How long did you test positive?
12 days.
Yeah, that's like my wife was 13 days and my 4-year-old was 10.
Mm. Yep.
Brutal. But not symptomatic for that long. But so you're just a little sluggish, huh?
Yeah. However much sleep I get during the night, I feel like I got about 3 hours less than that.
Oh, no. Now you feel like me. That's good, because I've been back in morning drive this week. Yeah, filling in for those vacationing musers. So we're all kind of dragging a little ass today. It'll make for a fun show for sure. So as we broadcast on this Wednesday, June 29th, the 12th episode of this second season of Diamond Pod, Texas Rangers, 36-37. Now, they had a very winnable, maybe even sweepable series at home this past weekend against a bad Nationals team, and the offense really couldn't come through. I think a total of 1-for-20 with runners in scoring position. That led to a series loss against the Nats. It was cool to see Juan Soto at the park, but still frustrating. Then they go to Kansas City to open up a 9-game road trip, and the last two nights the Bats have done their thing. They've totaled 18 runs in back-to-back wins, and here in less than an hour, they're going to go for a sweep as they deal with Zach Greinke this afternoon. And Scott and I touched on it quite a bit last week. And Tepid, we were talking about it off air before we started. Dude, this is fine. I know that, you know, people want to quibble about, oh, the back of the rotation. And man, sometimes the lineup just isn't meeting new expectations. But you have to take a step back. This team's nearly 500. And it was a 102 loss team last year. And mediocre, even slightly below average baseball is a huge step forward.
Yeah, I mean, I fired off a series of tweets that we were kind of talking about earlier, but, you know, I mean, yes, it's still not super fun because it's not like, okay, we're just locked into a playoff race or something like that, or you're kind of looking at who you can acquire at the deadline and, you know, this, that, and the other, the things that we did for, I don't know, almost a decade. But it's also – last year, that team lost 103 games or 102
102.
Games?
Yep.
102. Yeah. They won 60 damn games. That's crap. Like, that's a terrible baseball team. They went 60-102. And this year's team is going to win probably at least 20 games more than that, right? I mean, they're –
well,
pacing,
you're talking about – that put them at, what, 80-82? I mean,
yeah.
Maybe.
I mean,
as long as the look, my thought going into the season was about 76 wins.
Okay.
And I feel like if they hit that, that's fine.
Yeah, that was my morning news prediction. And I thought I thought that was being a homer picking 76 wins, you know?
Yeah. And the, you know what the funny part is? They're in second place because sweet Jesus, are the Mariners and the Astros a train wreck?
Are you mean the Angels?
No.
The Astros are good. Yeah. The Angels are a train wreck. And I save that because I want to talk about their —
holy crap.
Their fracas, their brawl, and just the holy crap
disaster.
Nature of the Angels.
Like,
it's bad.
I mean, it could always, you know, in sports, because only one team wins the last game of the season. I mean, that's, you know, that's the reality. I think that the older you get, the more, maybe it's just for me, it's anecdotal, but for the older you get, it seems like the more you understand, like, listen, we're not going to win championships.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless you live in Boston, which seems to have been in a weird run of teams winning championships.
I know.
But, like, you just realize, listen, that my team's probably not going to win the last game of the season because only one team does. But you just want them to be better. You want them to be competitive. We said this a little bit after they splashed out the big dough for Seager and Simeon and Gray. It was like, listen, all you can ask for as a fan is that your ownership tries. Like, they try. They spend money, you know? I mean, there are other issues I have with ownership, but they on field, they spent money. They're trying. They have – I tweeted that they have a top 10 farm system. You know why I tweeted that? Because I didn't really have the stones to say top five and then have a bunch of people try and argue with me. But it probably is top five.
Welcome to Twitter.
Like, yeah. So I hedged. I hedged and was just like, it's top 10. But I do think they're going to be really close in a lot of rankings to top five, especially considering they're adding the number three pick, you know, in a few weeks here. So, I mean, I see it a little bit on Twitter like I did after. Maybe I think it just kind of piqued my interest after they lost to the Nats, who suck. But
yeah, they're not good.
Yeah, but there was just a lot of really kind of weird hand-wringing, and this is ridiculous.
That's DFW, though, man. Like, look, the Mavericks are losing Jalen Brunson in free agency, and people are freaking out about that. And don't even look at social media during Cowboys season. It's just part of the it's part of the landscape here, and I get that. And honestly, I would rather the fan base be engaged and have that passion than just complete apathy.
Yeah,
which
I don't have a beef with it, but I was kind of – it kind of took me back, like, hey, first of all, have you ever been through – have you ever watched baseball? Like, the season takes freaking forever.
Well, not a lot of people do watch baseball on a regular basis anymore. Yeah.
Good point. Well, good point. Have you ever followed a baseball season? It's a damn marathon. It takes forever. And there's going to be a million ups and downs. But also, big picture, okay, like, I'm fine with the Rangers. Like, I tweeted that I've been as pissy a Rangers fan as there has been for the last few years. I mean, they lost 102 games last year. And they're maybe going to lose 86 games this year. So
fine.
Okie dokie.
Great. Like, that's great.
Okay, fine. You know, I don't know. It was just – it's just a strange time, I think, as people realize. Like, I don't think anybody really realized the depth of just how bad they were last year. Like, they're going to improve by – maybe 20 games and still not finish at 500. Like, they were 42 games under 500 last year. I mean, that's a crappy baseball team, and they're better.
Yeah.
Are they a competitive, are they championship caliber?
No.
Have you watched the Astros hit? Yes.
Yeah, they took care of the Mets, a pretty good Mets team yesterday, and just beat the living crap out of them.
They're
going to be a problem. And that's the thing. I think a lot of us have forecasted maybe that, maybe the Astros will have a dip here in a few years and the Rangers will be on the upswing. They're still very young. They're still relatively cheap. They're going to be a pee problem for a long time. Now, Scott, you and I were talking earlier, and we don't want to lose sight of just, the aforementioned guys that made all the money, Semien, Seager, and Gray. Let's start with those guys as we talk about the big club, because Johnny Gray has looked – damn good in June. And again, he's done this before in his career, and there's been some inconsistencies. But right now, the depth on his slider and just him having confidence, and maybe it's just something as simple as not having a knee brace on his knee, he's looked terrific in June.
Yeah, you're looking at him now. He's got an ERA of 3.89 in 13 starts. It's obviously he had a rough start to the season, but it's one of those things where you might not see the big picture by watching every game. You're almost better off just kind of doing something else for a while and then coming back and going, oh, look, John Gray, he's earning a salary. Great, we're fine. You can't really quite say the same about Seager and Semien yet. Neither one has had that great a season, but they've been okay. And it's critical to keep in mind just how poor hitting is in general in the major leagues right now.
Right.
What the standard is. And I think there's still among Ranger fans kind of a hangover with the old park that was so offense friendly. Now the park is neutral or maybe even a little bit pitcher friendly. The standard for what constitutes acceptable hitting is so much lower than it was about 5 years ago. And you gotta keep that in your head. But overall, the Rangers have had bad luck getting to 500 once they get close to it, but I'm not overly worried about that. This isn't a thing, the Rangers themselves talking about, being competitive and maybe getting in the wild card race and things like that. I'm personally not worried about that at all. I'm not looking at the wild card standings. If they do get on a hot streak, great, but my thing is just building towards 2023.
Yeah, yeah, just get better. To John Gray point, by the way, I went back and looked last night. I watched some of the big league game. What do you guys think of that? I watched some big league baseball.
Times are changing.
There was a fancy stadium and highly paid individuals. It was very unique. But I was watching and seeing a little bit of juice coming out of that arm, and I was like, huh. So I went back and looked at it, and Gray has a it's not completely, you know, abnormal for him to pick up velocity as the season goes. So I went and looked. In April, his four-seamer averaged 94.96. May, it was 95.61. June, 96.07.
Damn.
So
that's a jump.
Adding some velo there, and he's just throwing harder. I think the arm is getting looser, and especially you also got to consider, you know, weird spring trainings,
blister issue.
Now, yeah, the blister issue. I forgot about that. When was that? Was that April?
That was April. Yeah,
that was early,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I think now we're getting a little bit more representative of what he's gonna be. I mean, is he an elite number one? No. But, I mean, it's pretty damn good what you're getting right now, and I think this is more representative of what we'll see going forward.
And Seager and Semien, like we said, not the best start, but, again, offense has been somewhat suppressed in baseball. What do we make? And, again, this is one of those things that gets ink spilled for like a day and maybe it goes away, but Josh Smith, staying with the club and Zeke Duran getting demoted, we can maybe touch on that, but Josh Smith has been a very good on-base guy so far, and he has been throughout his professional career. Last night, he's hitting leadoff, and I understand that Woody crafts his lineup due to handedness of the pitcher and who's in there, but if Josh Smith can somehow harness this and move it forward as the league adjusts to him as a rookie, dude, if he could be the new leadoff guy and you could hit Seager second and Semien third, maybe they stumbled into something. I don't know. Maybe that's just being a hopeful fan, but I'm glad that the Josh Smith at bat has continued to be very professional and very good.
Yeah, that's not a surprise to any of us either, because we all saw him take a million of those kinds of at bats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. His quality ABs is not a fluke for Josh Smith. You know, I still go back to Scott's original point about him, is that he doesn't really sting the ball, but it just finds holes. That kind of scares me.
He hits it at the right. Yeah, which I think, yeah, I think it limits him going forward. I still am of a frame of mind that he's going to be a busy role player as opposed to a starter. But
right.
That's right. The kind of at-bats he's taking, that's who he is. And it's really good to see him continue it at this level, because we've seen plenty of times where guys in the minor leagues, they have that kind of success, and then when they reach the majors, it can all they have a few at-bats, and then they're kind of diving for balls, and it just kind of all falls apart. Smith has been very composed so far, and it's very impressive.
Real quick, do you think Zeke Duran was falling into that? I know he went 0 for 15. I know that because of the roster crunch, especially having a Mitch Garver who can only DH right now, probably definitely played a factor into that. They add Steven Duggar as a veteran outfielder in the Willie Calhoun trade. Do you think that Duran was having worse at-bats as he was getting more exposed to the league, or do you think it was just one of those things where they don't feel he's fully ready yet and he's got options, so let's go ahead and put him down?
I think it was that. Yeah, I think they just not fully ready yet. He was not seeing breaking balls really well, you know, because he hasn't seen spin at that level. You know, I know we talked about it before we started hitting record, and I've tweeted about it. The gaps between the levels right now are big, like big and ugly, you know, just big, ugly gaps between A ball and double A. And then double A and triple A and triple A in the big leagues. The big leagues are a friggin' buzzsaw, especially on the pitching side. That's why you're seeing hitters not being able to hit. And it's just really, really hard. And I think that having skipped triple A altogether, I didn't have a huge problem with it. I know, Sean, you did. You just kind of wanted to see him over Culberson, right?
Yeah, and that's and Brad Miller, too. And I understand they gave Brad Miller a 2-year deal. I just feel like,
right.
Look, again, it goes back to our conversation from earlier in the pod that there's no real expectation. Hey, it's great they're near 500, but if they win 70-some games, that's a success. So maybe just seeing a guy thrive early, maybe I would just maybe give him more than a 0-for-15 stretch. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the other thing, too, is we – and I always tell folks this about not only promotions but also demotions. We're not in the room. That's the hardest part is you're like, I don't know, man, was this kid freaking out? I don't think that he was based on what I know of Zeke and having watched him in Frisco. He's a really upbeat player.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe just that adversity he wasn't dealing with very well. We've definitely seen that. We saw that with Leody the first time he came up. We saw that with when they went crazy in 2020 and did Shirt and Apostle, Leody and Huff. I don't know. It's really tough to say, but I do always – leave room for the fact that there is a ton of information.
Sure.
The bulk of the information that we don't know. So maybe in that room, it was, you know, the people who were talking to that dude every day saw a little something. Maybe it was a body language thing. Maybe it was I mean, you know what? I'm not saying this is the case, and I shouldn't even say this in Zeke's case, but it does happen where sometimes somebody comes up and hey, man, you should have been here 20 minutes early because you're a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Not on time, 20 minutes early. Or maybe he was getting frustrated and down on himself, and they said, you know what, let's just – I don't know.
There's no way to know. Like you said, we're not in the room. Right. Who knows? But I think a lot of it, too, is maybe – and maybe this is a Woody thing, having a little PTSD of not having any veterans last year. And I know – and look, maybe Mitch Garver, who has basically come to terms or close to coming to terms with having surgery on his elbow – near the All-Star break, so he'll be ready for next year. That will clear up things on the roster to give them more flexibility. So if Duran hits a triple A, maybe he's back sooner than we think. You know what I mean?
Wait, so the Garver thing, he's considering doing that like midseason?
Thought
the whole point was
right.
He's gonna wait.
Yeah, there's talk of that, and he's even saying, look, I want to be fine for 23. So he might go ahead and do it.
The problem is if he waits too long, it cuts into next season too.
Because he's having Tommy John, or what? What is wrong with
him? I don't know if it's Tommy John per se, but
it's the UCL.
It's an ulnar thing, or it may be that modified
it's
one.
Serious. It's serious. So
he's a catcher and he can't throw, so he's a DH right now. And look, I like Mitch Gart. He hit a bomb the other night, and he can still do that with, you know, 1.5 arms, which is cool. Yeah. But he's not doing it enough to where it's worth it. And
I didn't know that the time frame for that might be All-Star break. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And he even admitted it as much that
so
it's probably going to happen.
So then it would just be bring Huff back up, right? And make Huff the backup catcher.
No. You got Maybrice Viloria here right now. And
that's right.
That seems like a good backup catcher because Jonah Heim has taken a step. And
because they need Huff to get everyday ABs and everyday appearances.
And much like you need Duran playing in left field and playing every day, that's why they sent him down. And I get that.
Put Duran in center, too.
That's what they said.
Yeah. Now, last night he was at third base. Maybe I'm going to be out there tonight. Hopefully I'll get a little bit of a look at him in the outfield. But I think
in Duran's
case. Yeah, 0-for-4, committed 2 errors. Kind of a rough, kind of an ugly game for a Triple-A debut. No big deal. I mean, Duran going down didn't bother me quite as much because I kind of always had it in my head that it was going to happen, that they were going to bring him up for a little bit and then send him to AAA. And I think if you're in an either-or situation with Smith, I feel like Smith's versatility plus his batting approach kind of fits the needs of the big league club a little
bit. And slightly better defender at third base. I mean, if you just put the two side by side, I think he's a little more consistent than Duran right now. That's fair.
Yeah.
And it's not by much, but
he's also a better shortstop.
Yeah.
And his profile, I mean, for me, just this is just my completely my opinion. I've always thought Josh Smith had a super utility profile. I look at Zeke Duran as someone who can be an everyday player.
Right, right.
You just have to find the right spot for him because I think that his bat is going to be good enough to warrant everyday plate appearances, and I think that I got to say, out of the whole time that he was in the big leagues, I loved it. It was super fun to watch. You know what surprised me most? The arm. Like, his ability to transition into that third base You know, the throw from third is that over the you know, you're coming over the top. It's, and I'm doing what I love to do on a podcast, which is sort of demonstrate and visually show the listeners while I'm throwing. You know, that's coming up there at that 2 o'clock range. Shoot, some guys are 1 o'clock, you know, like it's an overhand throw. Whereas a lot of shortstop and definitely second base, it's more of a kind of a quick release.
3 o'clock.
Almost the push. Yeah, almost the push out. And I can't say I was stunned, because I do have a tweet on the record from months ago saying that I thought that third base would probably be Zeke's best position. So I would like to let the record state that I am a unabated genius and a soothsayer. But, like, there was some flat out, like, plant that back foot, you know, a ball up the line type of thing behind third. Maybe even in foul territory, plant that back foot, put that arm at 1 o'clock instead of 3 o'clock, and let it eat. And I mean, I loved it. I mean, I thought what I was seeing was, holy crap, this guy is got a real shot at being an everyday third baseman. I don't want to even talk about Young, because it's just still heartbreaking that he's missing this year. But I loved what I saw from Zeke at third base. And I get it that they want to show him around and see if they can put him in left field and center field. That's fine, I guess, getting reps. But he also hasn't had a bazillion reps at third before he just started playing third in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I personally would love it if he just keeps trotting out to third base at Round Rock. And you know what? If Josh comes back and forces him off that position, then you got a good problem. You know, then you figure out what to do with Zeke. But I don't know. It was interesting, and it was fun to watch him play third base at the big league level. And, yes, big league breaking balls ate him up. But you know what? They were eating up Bobby Witt for 2.5 months too. And Julio, although not Julio, didn't really struggle. I mean, they ate up Adley Rutschman for 2 months.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. It's tough to say, but he was fun to watch when he was there.
So, Scott, let's talk a little Round Rock, because we mentioned, yes, Duran went over 4 last night, and you had a Cole Reagan start as he takes his first loss at AAA. His first 2 starts were Bafo. Last night, the line doesn't look bad, but he only went 4 innings after throwing, I think, a total of, what, 13 innings in his first 2 outings?
Yeah, he only walked 1 batter, but he had a few counts go to 3 balls. Couple of other batters where it just kind of got stretched out. So this was actually his second shortest start of the year in terms of innings, but it was, I mean, it's weird. This is only the second time in my life I've ever seen him in person. I saw him, and you were probably there, Tepid. I saw him throw live BP,
yep,
in March of 2017, mm-hmm, him and Alex Spies and like, mm-hmm, Pedro Piano. And I haven't seen him since, because I didn't get to see him in Frisco last year, and he's been hurt so much. So I was just like, gosh, I can't believe this guy's been around 6 years, and this is only the second time I've seen him. But anyway, yeah, moved up to AAA. Last night was his third start, probably the worst of the three, based on bits and pieces of the other two that I saw. But
he was 90 to 92 last night?
90 to 94.
Okay.
The 90 was an outlier. He was mostly 2-3.
Okay.
So not like great, but
With that changeup, that's fine.
Yeah, the changeup is best pitch, I think.
It
easily.
Sounds like they've kind of taken the reins off of it too. Like in Frisco, you know, he would have games where you could very visibly tell like the whole goal, and even in talking to him a few times, you knew that it was very much developmental start. Like there was times because even he would say, like, man, I feel good about the changeup. I'm cool with the changeup, but I've got to learn how to use the other pitches. That's basically exactly what he told me one time.
Yeah, and he's been throwing a ton of changeups.
That's
lately.
Good, because at AAA, it's like, just get guys out, you know?
Right.
And that thing is wicked.
It's, you know, you see a lot of guys with changeups, and it's basically they're trying to get it to fade outside and get swings. He commands it really well.
Yeah,
he's
he
able
moves
to
it around
move it around.
Mm-hmm. He'll throw them up. He'll throw changeup.
He will
up
throw them
on
up.
Purpose.
The way I described it is, if you're a catcher, basically the locations of this pitch make a backwards L. It's all the way along the bottom end of the strike zone, and then all the way up the outer edge. So
yeah,
he can put it where he wants. And the thing that bugs me about that is that he did not throw a single changeup to a left-handed batter.
Oh,
and
really?
No. And I need to go back and check to see whether what he's done in the other two starts. But I'm like,
who was catching? He shake off much?
He doesn't usually.
He doesn't usually.
It was Huff last night. But
okay. Yeah, he'd probably trust Sam.
Yeah.
Call that.
But given his command of it, I'm like, throw it to lefties. You can do that. So hopefully in the future I'll see a little bit more of that because it's a really good pitch. Threw a fair amount of I just call it a cutter. There's not a whole lot of break to it, and it's also
the slider or the cutter.
Yeah, I mean,
because he's got both.
Yeah, I mean, most of what I saw last night, there were a couple pitches that dipped down to 85, but mostly it was about 88, and comes out of his hand and really looks like a fastball.
That's a cutter.
You look at the Statcast. There's only about 1 to 2 inches of movement the other direction. So
what did Statcast call it?
Statcast is on drugs right now. Statcast has no. I've seen. It is categorizing pitches so terribly right now.
It's their summer drug binge.
That's right. I saw that you had a tweet about that.
I said it was like had taken some edibles or something.
Because they had the slider as a two-seamer, right?
They're calling the slider a four seam fastball, even though it's upper 80s, and then they're calling his four seam fastball a sinker.
I don't think he throws a two seamer.
No. If he does, I'm not picking it up. It looks like a pretty straightforward four-seamer.
Right.
But anyway, it's, you know, mostly last night it looked to me more like a cutter. It's not like it's a great pitch as a standalone, but it mixes with the fastball really well because it comes out of his hand the same way. Tough to pick up.
Back of the rotation starter for you next year?
Yes. That's where I'm going with this. It's like, if you're thinking, oh, he's going to be a number two starter. No.
Yeah.
But could he fill out a rotation? It looks like it to me.
Well, the fear, too, is he going to get any big league starts this year? Because I think as a show, we don't want him to come up right now. But there's a level of outcry with Taylor Hearn getting demoted and Glenn Otto not looking good. So now there's two spots in the rotation, and they don't want to go full bullpen. By the way, just to add to the context of what we're talking about, Evan tweeted about an hour ago saying they're going to go Otto, Perez, Gray against the Mets this weekend after an off day tomorrow. So there's not going to be an official bullpen game. So that's good. There's no, I guess, need to maybe call somebody up because nobody's knocking on the door. So sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Go ahead, Scott.
Oh, no, that's okay. I mean, I'm not a big fan of, given Reagan's history and the fact that he's only made 3 AAA starts, I'm not a fan of calling him up now. However, given the way he's pitched this year, and especially he's got to be able to prove that he's got some stamina that was missing last year, understandably. Yeah.
Which we've been saying since March.
Oh, yeah, right. Like, he's got to prove he can go give a full 5 innings. But to me, he's kind of like somewhere in between. I don't really want to call him up now, but I don't necessarily want to call him up the last week of the year. Maybe he can fit somewhere in between there.
He's not someone that, I mean, you know, you got to, I want to tread lightly on how I word this, you know, on while being recorded. You know, that's why I always say, meet me at a ball game. You get the unfiltered version. But he's not someone that you're building your franchise around.
No.
So if he burns through some eligibility, some, you know, Rule 5 eligibility, or, you know, not Rule 5, but like free agents. I mean, I'm not afraid to start his clock.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
Is what I'm saying.
I don't think that's
a guy with 2 Tommy Johns and who's, what, 24, I think now?
Something like that. I mean, 24? To me, even though he was a first-round pick, to me, you're kind of playing with house money now.
Right.
Given
his
history. Yeah,
2 Tommy Johns.
That's fair, you know, and again, we've said, like I mentioned earlier, we've mentioned since March that this guy, it's going to come down to, let me know where you're at in August. And, I mean, I cannot believe that everybody's just spit the bit so bad. And not one guy has really stepped up and grabbed this thing by the neck. You know, I think Levi has a piece about that today.
He has gotten
a chance to get to it yet. But, like, just watching AJ Alexi.
It's a mess. Lord, it's a mess.
It's just frustrating to watch these guys of all, because holy crap, are there opportunities right in front of you?
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
It's right there. Like, you can be in the
Alexi especially. Because of you know, Wynn's kind of on his own timetable. He's had his problems, but it's not like we were
22.
It's not like we were all sitting here going, why isn't Wynn up in June? Nobody was talking about that stuff. But Alexi, it's really frustrating, especially because he comes such a long way.
He looked okay last year. That's the thing.
I was really impressed with his growth last year because he had turned into a guy who had four pretty good pitches.
Yeah, and didn't walk a lot of guys.
Yeah, I mean, his control wasn't great, but it was good enough.
Yeah.
And the walks are up this year, and he's getting hit hard, too. I mean, it's the PCL, but still, he's given up 19 homers, most in the system by a fair margin.
You know what I think would fix some of that?
Do tell.
Shave. Clean shaven. Just start fresh.
Don't look so Amish.
The chin... the Amish, the chin strap, don't look like there's an outside chance that you build fireplaces on the weekends.
Or you go to barn raisings for fun.
I mean, he is from Pennsylvania.
You know, I don't want to make a move yet, but the thing that popped in my head is looking at the StatCast stuff from last week is that he topped out at 98.9.
Bullpen.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm not saying do it now, but listen, he is somebody
that's about half of the damn Frisco rotation, if not more, that I look at, and I'm like, okay, I am very – I love somebody like Avery Weems. He's fun to watch. But for me, he should be in the bullpen in the second half of this season. You know, Slayton should be in the bullpen.
Yeah.
Kent should probably be in the bullpen. And you may – because you may have some very good mojo there. I mean, I think Weems' fastball slider, you know, from the left side, I mean, he's regularly 95 at from the left side. So, I mean, put him in the bullpen, maybe there's a, you know, some sevens, some eights from the left side for one inning with the fastball slider combo that is still the most coveted combo in big league baseball. I don't like hearing that about AJ, though, and it's just been – maybe it's just like, okay, it's been half a season. Maybe he can bounce back.
Yeah, maybe he can pull a Brock
Burke. Yeah, there's time.
You know?
It's just frustrating because there are major league innings sitting there waiting
just
for
sitting.
Him.
And he's on the 40, and he did fine last year in the big leagues in five starts. I wonder what the biggest issue is. I mean, he's getting hit, so that's fastball command usually, right?
Yeah.
I mean
– I'm not sure. The problem is the last two times I saw him, I was – by coincidence, I was there with family, so I wasn't really watching very closely.
I bet they're just doing deep dives into that data, and I bet the Rangers know what it is. It's just the difference between knowing. It's like everybody else. Just because you know what your problems are doesn't mean you can fix them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, well, that's the problem. I'll get asked that about Twitter. It's like, what should the Rangers do? It's like, I don't know. I'm doing a podcast from my converted garage.
Just a guy.
I don't know. We're bloggers. I don't know. People keep asking me about the draft. Like, I don't know.
Read a mock. Who knows?
Take it third.
Sean and I talked about that last week. How about how we weren't talking about the draft like we were last year? But last year, other than I just blanked, the local guy who went to Arizona,
Marler.
Yeah, there you go. Other than him, pretty much it was like a whole bunch of college guys. The problem is this year, other than there's one shortstop, but everybody else is like high school.
Yeah, there's Brooks Lee and then Kevin Parada, who's the catcher out of Georgia Tech.
And Andrew Jones.
Yeah, I haven't seen him quite that high, but the problem is they're all high. It's like, I don't know anything about high school guys.
Unless you're actively going and watching them play baseball, it's really hard.
You seen Lawler and A-ball this year?
Yeah, he's tearing it up.
366, 465, 620.
Damn.
Playing shortstop every day, going 3-4-6.
Admittedly, it's the Cal League, but still, that's impressive. Yeah,
okay, quick transition to the Rangers pick. Jack Leiter, again.
Yes.
Still scuffling, and it feels like there's not going to be any AAA this year, which is probably okay. And I think we all need to just digest it and realize that he needs to be a professional for a season, you know?
As the resident Leiter whisperer who's watched every single pitch that he's thrown as a pro, I'm fine with him taking a week off. The biggest thing that I can tell you over the last few weeks, it's the stuff is still great. There's nothing wrong with the stuff. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the makeup or the mentality. He doesn't have great fastball command, and he doesn't have great command of the curveball when he's off. When he's on, those things are working for him. But when he's not landing the curveball and he's not putting it in the different quadrants that he wants to, he's in some trouble, because then they're just
falls
sitting
behind
on the fastball. Yeah.
Yeah,
he falls behind. They sit on the fastball, and you know, there's not a lot of, he has great kind of carry on his fastball. That's one of the things that you'll see a lot, is, you know, it kind of zips. But it's still, it comes out of his hand pretty similarly every time. And they're just on it, when they can sit on it. So not really worried about him, but yeah, he doesn't have great fastball command right now. And isn't commanding the curveball most of the time. When he is, he's really, really difficult, because then he'll whip in the sliders. Changeup's been fine. It's never, you know, I would love to see the data on it, but
he's not throwing a lot of them.
I don't have him ever as throwing more than, I think the most he's thrown in an outing was 10,
but
maybe 9.
I've seen a few that look pretty damn good.
It's fine. Yeah, I was a little bit worried about it early, and then, because we didn't see one for, I think, the first two starts. But, yeah, it's fine. It's a fine pitch. I wish he had more confidence in it, and I think that he will. But this is a kid who skipped A ball completely, low A and high A. My other thought on it is he's exactly at the right place for his development. You know why? Because some days he kicks ass, and some days he gets his ass kicked. Like, that tells you that he's in exactly the right place, you know, because some days he's dominant, and some days he looks fantastic, and then other days he gets his brains hit in. So I think it's fine. I'm fine with them giving him a week off or 2 weeks off, you know, even skip some starts, get into the data, and
I hope
see what
I
it
hope
is.
It's 1 week, because 2 weeks is San Antonio.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to miss
right.
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to be honest, too, he's gone up against some pretty good hitting teams.
Yeah.
You know, Arkansas's got some guys, and then – you know, he had to face Tulsa. Tulsa, that was back when, like, Michael Bush and those guys were still with
right.
Tulsa. Andy Páez. They've got, you know, like I said, stop me if you've heard this before, but the Dodgers have a good farm system.
No way.
You know, yeah. And a good big league team.
Yeah.
And a competent front office with deep pockets. You know, and are they paying Trevor Bauer right now?
No, I thought that
suspended without pay.
Is he not getting paid?
Yeah, he's not getting paid right now.
Unpaid?
Once
okay,
he got
great.
Suspended.
Right.
Okay. But yeah, I mean they're good, and so I'm not worried about Jack. I think that this is fine. I just think the truth is he's in exactly the right spot where he's supposed to be.
Totally.
He's in Double A, and he's getting crushed some games. Some days you're the hammer. Some days you're the nail.
What about Owen White? He had his first Double A start.
Yay.
I was doing a diamond talk that night, so I didn't see it, but the line looked okay.
He looked fine, you know, not a lot of – very weak contact. One of the runs that came across, he left on second, and the reliever gave up some hits. So it was charged to Owen because it was his guy. But, you know, in a big league setting, you know, that you would hope that reliever would come in and not allow that runner to go two bases. But, yeah, he looked fine, and he's going on Friday night for Frisco. At least that was the plan, I would assume, because Jack was supposed to go tomorrow night. I haven't seen a rotation update yet.
I don't know. This news is so new.
Yeah, I haven't seen a rotation update yet, but I believe Owen will go at home on Friday night. And
cool.
I'm looking forward to seeing my boy Bar fight White, because as I have said from March, I'm telling you people.
Bar fight White.
The gap between him and Jack, it's not as huge as you would think. There is a gap. Jack is better. But it's not a huge gap. Owen was 95 to 97, touched 99 in his first outing for Frisco. So,
yeah, he was a little amped up. He was a couple ticks hotter than when I saw him in mid-May.
Yeah, yeah, he was like 3-6 mostly in for Hickory, right? Is that what you saw him was 3-6?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I think very, very highly of him as a prospect and can't wait to see him in Frisco on Friday.
One last thing before we wrap up today. It's a few big league notes. First off, Jose Trevino should be an all-star this year. He is having a career year with the New York Yankees, which is amazing. I did think Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was a little out of turn during his interview, saying that he got shafted. Yeah. No, getting shafted would be put in AAA. Yeah. John Daniels and company put him at a place where he could play immediately.
Traded him to the damn Yankees.
I know. Yes. And they're the best team in baseball, and he is a big part of that. Hell, he was hitting fifth the other night, which is
and I tweeted
bonkers
it at the
to
time,
think about.
My only problem with Isaiah is that he says it out loud.
You can think it all you want, but
yes, but come on, buddy. That is exactly the kind of shit that fueled that guy from being. I mean, was he ever even really top 30 with Texas?
I can't.
No.
I mean, this is a guy.
You probably are the one who started it, Tepid. But there were a handful of us, even though he was completely unheralded, going. This guy's going to make the major leagues.
And
I don't know what he's going to do,
but
he's going to make
it. You're like, this kid can play, and he's mean. You know what I wish? I tweeted this to some folks who were asking me about Isaiah's comments. I'm like, yes, it's ridiculous that he still talks to the media like this. He needs to stop doing that. But I wish more players were meaner. Do you know how many soft players I've seen with way more talent than Isaiah? A lot.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Meet me at a ball game. I'll give you the dish. But, you know, it's like, I wish more players were mean. Do you want to know why I like Barfight White and why I call him Barfight White? Because he's the last guy that you would want to mess with in a bar fight.
He's a big bastard.
He has the neck the size of his thighs, and he's from rural North Carolina. He likes to hunt, fish, and shoot things.
Hell yeah.
And he's he gets on the mound, and he's mean. And I want more mean players like Isaiah. So I loved the comment, but I wish I would have just heard it in hearsay rather than in the damn New
Telling
York media.
Telling a reporter,
I get it, Isaiah. Like, we all get it. And by the way, Trevi was like, yeah, I don't really feel like I was that shafted. No,
he's pretty happy right now. I hope he makes an all-star team. That would be so freaking cool
also,
for such a good human being.
The other thing that I will say about Trevi is baseball is a very long season.
Yeah. Because, like, I mean, Trevino reached the majors solely on defense. Mm-hmm. He didn't hit in the minors.
No. But I love him to death on a personal level, on a professional level. Let's do this for 162.
Yeah, dude. Why not?
Let's see
I would love
where
to
we
see
are
it.
For 162, you know.
Well, you mentioned mean, and the Angels and Mariners got mean this past week, and anybody listening to this has seen the brawl as Jesse Winker got into it and Jose Rendon offhand shoved him in the face, and a fight broke out and actual punches were thrown. And just yesterday, Major League Baseball doled out suspensions to 12 different people, a lot of those assistant coaches, some of the players, and it was a good old fracas that actually had substance to it for once. In fact, there was two waves of fights breaking out within the scrum. It was great from like an outsider standpoint, but some of the comedy that spawned from that was Archie Bradley, the Angels reliever, who I guess slipped over the little fence area in front of the dugout trying to like get out into the mix, fractured his elbow, is going to be out at least a month. And what's the thing about Archie Bradley, that's not the most embarrassing thing that's happened to him in his baseball life, because he decided back in 2018 when talking to a Yahoo Sports podcast that he admitted that he had a number two accident in his pants in the bullpen and had to come pitch in a game for the Arizona Diamondbacks. So whenever I think of Archie Bradley, it's not going to be the fractured elbow from the big fight between the Mariners and Angels. It's going to be him, you know, having backside issues out on the hill.
God.
Awesome.
Angels
Oklahoma's finest.
Such a mess.
I know.
If I saw it on Twitter this morning, you could probably Google it and dig it up. There's the gif of Trout in the outfield.
Oh, yeah.
And
I tweeted it.
He's pissed off because one of his pitchers is tipping his pitches.
Yeah.
And there's a picture of Trout out there in the outfield kind of bringing his hands to his body and then putting them away and then just kind of raising his hand and just like, hell with this.
Dude.
Yeah, and by the way, Bradley's pitched in 21 games since missing, you know, since coming off the injured list. Like this is a key component of their bullpen.
Well, and it's not like their bullpen's good. It's not like their rotation is good. And last night you had Trout homering, you had Ohtani homering and hitting a couple doubles, and they still get driven 11-4.
Yeah,
you know they.
Yeah, I tweeted about it. So Elvis Peguero comes in. He comes in with the bases loaded, one out in the sixth. okay? And he immediately gets Tim Anderson. Tim Anderson grounds into a double play, so he's out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's out of that. He comes back out in the seventh, and what I tweeted was that the White Sox found an iPad. The White Sox found an iPad that was fully loaded up with their advanced scouting, and they found it in between innings, and Peguero didn't get any one of the first four batters out.
Yikes.
Because he was – and I hope that – and anyone who's listened to this podcast for this long understands that pitch tipping is such a nuanced – like, it's incredibly hard to pick up. Big leaguers pick up all kinds of just little teeny tiny tiny minuscule things that the untrained eye would never see. This was not that. This is hand and glove placement that is so clearly obvious that it's easy to pick up on the broadcast.
Man.
And it was very easy for Mike Trout to pick up about 300 feet away. Like, it's like this is an obvious pitch tip. Like, there are pitch tips sometimes, and I'll be talking to scouts, and they're like, oh, did you see what he did there? And I'll just look at him like, no, I did not see that. I don't. No, but in when you're a professional and that's your job and everything, you see all kinds of stuff. Peguero was pitch tipping in one of the most blatant and obvious pitch tips that I've ever seen that's come to public light. And, yes, seeing Trout talking about it, and then – and you all will notice on Twitter that it's being juxtaposed also against the look on his face whenever Joe Maddon walked Corey Seager.
Yeah, like, what
the
hell?
With the bases loaded earlier WTF. This season, like – yeah, like he kind of does the guy on first, guy on second, guy on third.
He's like, what?
Good. What the
wait,
hell?
What?
Like, yeah. He has the same kind of reaction last night. And, of course, it always makes me think of the JT Realmuto gif where he's, you know, where I can't remember who was coming in. Jared. I think it was Jared, the righty who lives in Plano, who's out of baseball now. But he was coming in, and Realmuto is there, and he sighs and sort of rolls his eyes in his catcher's gear as
bitch.
He watches this dude. Yes, like, oh.
Here we go.
God, here it's this guy, you know. And okay. Yeah, Trout has that same reaction.
Guys, is there a player that you've ever felt worse for? Understanding their greatness, yet understanding the mess that they have to deal with, not only on just like a few season basis, but on a career basis. I feel the worst for Mike Trout than any other player in the history of any sport.
You know who the only thing that comes close is in my mind is I used to always watch Kevin Garnett on the Timberwolves.
Okay.
And be like,
that's a good comp, yeah.
This team is terrible, and that guy is really badass. He was always kind of annoying to me, but and still is kind of annoying to me, but you always knew he was a badass. Like,
yeah.
He was putting up crazy numbers with the T-Wolves.
And what happened?
And they were winning, like, 23 games.
But what happened? He went to Boston and had a chance, and anything
exactly.
was possible.
Well, yep. that's the negative mitigating factor for Trout is that he didn't test the free market.
Nope.
Yeah.
He,
by the way,
now,
he has,
admittedly, he got paid.
Do you know how much he has left on his contract? So he's 30. His contract only goes for 8 more seasons. He only has it through 38. There's $296 million.
Golly, it feels like Ohtani's going to walk and just go somewhere else. It really does. And maybe not. I don't know. Maybe Marino backs up the Brinks truck like he did for Trout. But it's hard to imagine
and Rendon
Ohtani.
Got hurt again. He's played like – I saw Rendon has played, I think it's like 155 games.
Yeah, it sucks.
For them in now 3 full seasons.
And it's crazy that we're like, you know, bemoaning the woes of a rival. That's not supposed to happen in sports, but good Lord, Ohtani and Trout are just so different that you want some good things to happen there.
Right. My thing with them is, especially if it's a year where the Rangers aren't expected to be competitive, that is a year where I don't mind the Angels.
And keep in mind, if the Angels make a run at it, that means that fewer wins for the Houston Astros.
True.
Fine by me.
Sure. And they're pretty damn good, too.
Me.
They
That's
whipped
a
up on the Mets, and it's...
Hey, and you know what? You know what was obvious to everyone? Me included, I'm sure Scott included, that the moment you saw Yordan Alvarez, I remember watching him in Corpus Christi take batting practice, and I sent out a tweet, he's going to be a problem. And he was even at double A, the bat was so loud, he was so strong, it's so quick, and then to see him just pissing on pitches that were missing the strike zone by 3 inches. I mean, his plate discipline... That dude is a beast.
I mean, right. Watching him in AAA, I mean, when they tried to put him at first. His defense was laugh out loud.
Yeah, is he full DH now for Houston? Is he playing?
I think so. He's one of the few guys I've seen who was actually better off being in the outfield than first base. He could not keep his feet from getting crossed up at first base. It was just so bad. But then he would hit, and you're just like, oh, crap.
Yeah, he's going to make $200 million by just hitting.
This is an issue.
Totally. All right, well, I'm not too worried about the rest of the division. I'm only focused on the Rangers, who just got underway in Kansas City, and they already have two on against one Zach Greinke, who might be in his last year of professional baseball for all.
We got minor league mojo today too. Ricky Venasco struck out five and struck out 10 in five innings.
Hey, I like to hear that. Well, thank you so much for listening, Tepid. Good to have you back this week, Scott. Hope you get feeling better.
Me too.
And
COVID.
Yeah, and we all have vacations coming up, so maybe the podcast will be a little spotty next month. But we can't thank you enough for tuning in today, and next time we pod, you'll know about it because we'll put it out there. So thank you, P1s, for downloading and listening as you always do. This has been another edition of Diamond Pod here on the podcast feed of The Little Ticket.
You've been listening to Diamond Pod, where the guys talk Texas Rangers baseball and all that implies. Subscribe to the Ticket podcast feed for a new episode every week during baseball season. And of course, check out Diamond Talk with Ty Walker and Sean Bass on The Ticket after every weeknight Rangers home game.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.